Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Hickey Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. This podcast is, of course, free, but to ensure it continues, it does require support. If you can support the show and its continued research, there are a number of tiers to choose from, starting from £1 a month at patreon.com/themodernfairysightingspodcast. From the fairy folk tier upwards, you'll have access to my monthly path workings, which are led meditation visualizations. These aid inner journeying. With your support, I'm hoping to dedicate more time to this research and producing fortnightly podcast episodes. If you can't afford to support, then please do rate the podcast, and it would be a great help if you can share your favourite episodes with your friends. Thank you. Welcome to episode 10, where we hear from a guest who recounts his childhood experience of meeting a fairy. The encounter took place in his bedroom, the scene of many childhood memories for people. Some vague, some clear. It's hard to access clear memories of this kind, and childhood experiences are often dismissed, but they provide a great deal of insight. In this case, our guest regrets how the experience was borne out, and this has formed the basis of a decision to try and reconnect with the being. Listening to his story, I wonder if any of you have had experiences of a similar kind in childhood. I've had lots of lovely messages from listeners lately, and I do enjoy hearing from you. Whether you have a story to tell or simply want to get in touch to let me know your thoughts on the podcast, you can contact me through my website at scarletofthefae.com, and you can tweet me at @remain_curious. As always, please note that these are not fairy tales and not suitable for children or those who may be sensitive to creepy content. I hope you enjoy the episode, and I'll be back at the end for a brief reflection. Time to renovate. Time to renovate.
I'm gonna guess at about 7 or 8, and I was a great reader. I still am, but I was a massive reader when I was a little boy and read beyond my years. And I was in bed in a semi-detached house in Essex, in the town where we lived, fairly new house, built around 67, something like that. And I was reading, and I used to read with my knees up in the bed and rest my book or comic or whatever it was on there. Mm. And I'm trying to go back. My memory is that I was aware of something behind my knees. And I remember lowering my knees down. And this is how I know it wasn't a dream, because I was reading. And I actually, you know, had the thing in my hand. I lowered my knees down. And on the end of my bed was a little man. And I'm going to guess, I'm no good with estimating heights and sizes. A foot high, maybe less than that. Mm. And it was a sense that I knew he was there. And he was dressed as in my mind, the archetypal gnome that you would see in gardens and everything else, with the, you know, the little clothes. And it's interesting when we've spoken, some form of hat that I can't quite pinpoint in my head what the hat was, right? It's strange, isn't it? But he had a face that was terrifying, but it was really kind and it was really friendly. And my overriding, my mind... How can I word this? My instinct was saying, stay, this is okay. Mm. But my mind was saying, get the hell out of there, run. Do what you would always do, run away. And this little man said hello to me. And I can't remember what his voice was like. He was bearded, white beard. And that's probably the amount of detail I've still got in my head. Mm. And I remember getting out of bed. And I think I paused and I looked at him again on my bed, and he was still there. And I ran out the room into my mum. And I think mum was having a lie-in, and I got into her bed. And you know, I mean, you just snuggle up kind of thing. And I didn't tell her, but my overriding feeling that I had, and I distinctly remember this, was one of shame that I shouldn't have run, that it was not weak of me, but wrong of me to run, because this, he meant me no harm, and this was a wonderful opportunity, a thing. And I went to the default that all humans would do, you know, run away, ignore, it's not real. And that's what I still get from it, Joe, now, is that I shouldn't have run from that man, that chap.
That's hard, isn't it? That's really hard because as a child, that's your, it's a really shocking, if not terrifying, if you weren't terrified, it's still a shock, isn't it? And
That's what it
that's
was.
your
And
reaction, yeah.
it is, and it's almost like a battle within myself, stay or go. But he was warm, he was friendly. There was, you know, you read stories of evil spirits and evil fairies and everything else, but there was a warmth from him. It was okay.
How long do you think the experience lasted?
Oh, well, let me think. It was on the bed, so my knees came down. I must have looked at him. It was no longer than a minute, and I
Yeah.
got out of bed. You know, I can picture myself doing it. It's funny actually, because when I was younger, I looked. You must have seen the snowman.
Yeah,
I looked like the
film.
boy in the snowman. So I did my hair in like a pudding bowl hairstyle pajamas, and I envisage. I can see myself knees swinging out of bed. I'm in my bedroom now as I'm telling you this. I'm right back there, and I come to the edge of the bed and I pause and look at him. Still went, and that's so it's no more than a minute. It was
Wow.
so quick.
So you paused before you went out the door.
Yeah,
It's really lovely.
he was at the end
Yeah.
of the bed, got out of bed. I paused almost to look again, and then went into my mum's bed, and that was it. And
Oh.
I was terrified, you know, probably my heart pounding, everything else. And that kind of went. And then for years, I just had that experience. And as I got older, it almost faded into myth. This wasn't real. It wasn't real. But somehow I kind of knew it was. Probably about 86 or 87, I was about 16, 17. I'd started working in London, and I had money for the first time. I used to buy a lot of books, and I bought a book called The Autobiography of a Witch. Lois Bourne, I think the author's name was. And I read it on the train on the way home, and she spoke of being by a stream and seeing little people, I think she called them, in the stream, washing clothes, washing fabrics. And even as I'm talking to you now, I can feel a little bit of a tremble. Because at that moment, that very moment, it came back to me what I'd seen. And I knew then it was real because this book validated that experience
Yes.
that I had. Kind of like even now, you know, it took my breath away because I thought,
Yeah.
that's what I saw. That, and she described their little jerkins, I think, maybe a little belt, you know, all these stereotypical archetypal gnome fairy appearances. But it made my overriding feeling then was, that was what I saw.
Yeah.
That's what I saw. And I knew then that was something special that I'd been fortunate enough to experience.
Yeah, that is absolutely wonderful because it's that feeling of I'm not the only one.
No. And years, well, I say years later, it probably wasn't that much later. There's a chap called Andrew Collins, who's a psychic quester, and he was from my neck of the woods in Essex. And in his book, The Black Alchemist, he talked about going out to a hill in Sussex, I think it was, and coming across a little person again there. And again, he believes it was an elemental form kind of created by the landscape, within the landscape, by human thought, almost as if it was a thought created being, which is an interesting idea. But again, reading that description, reading his encounter with him, I thought, do you know what? I'm really at peace that what I saw or what I experienced was a visit from a gnome, for want of a better word.
Yeah, and it's lovely that he was in some way showing you love. You know, he was there on friendly terms. Can you remember what his expression was like towards you at all?
You know, it's funny.
So
Ever since I
hardened.
wrote this, I've tried so hard.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I've tried very hard to connect again.
Yeah.
Someone had said about connecting. And there's a very special place near where I live here that I encountered recently that turns out it was an ancient rumored to be a Druid spring. And there's a Neolithic era stone there.
Oh, amazing.
And there's a stream there. And I knew when I went there, I said to my wife as we were all my daughters where we were walking through it, and I said, this is a special place. So I kind of feel I have a focus there. But the expression he had, it was definitely benevolent, and
Yeah.
it was I can't get this across enough. It's okay. Talk to me, you know, don't be afraid. I'm talking to you. But his expression, it was of kindness. It was a really kind, an old face, but a kind face. And I knew I shouldn't have been afraid, but I reverted to what's the phrase? Reverted to type and ran. And I think part of it is it was a new house, and it was a house and not a stream or a field or anything else. What was going on there? It felt like it shouldn't have happened in a house.
It's an unexpected visitor, isn't it? In a new
Yeah.
house. When you said that his face was old, can you remember any more about that? What was it that made it old?
Oh, do you know, I can't even begin to think of colors. I could say something, but I wouldn't know if it was true what I was saying. If you know, I could say to you he had a pale face, but I don't know. The one thing I was, as I was telling the story, it was the eyes, the eyebrows. That's where the feeling of welcome and peace came from. And
Yeah.
he did. It is this case of wanting me to see him,
Yeah.
to have that contact. I don't know, but the chap on the bed was, you know, as I described, and the overwhelming feeling was, it's okay. Hello is what all he said was hello.
That's great. Hello.
Yeah, which is, and the feeling, and it's that feeling of shame. Even as I ran out, I was thinking, why are you doing this? And that's why I feel I know it was real, because they aren't necessarily maybe the feelings a young boy would have. You wouldn't know those emotions, possibly, I would
It's,
argue.
I mean, it's very, it'd be very confusing for a child to see something, in reality that they are told is not real. That's very, very confusing, to work out in your mind. And so it's no surprise that, you would run from a scene like that. Do you remember going back into your bedroom afterwards? Did you kind of, I guess not, it's probably too long
You
ago.
know, I vaguely do, and I'm being really careful here because I don't want to just answer and give you a kind of fantasy of what I did. But I vaguely remember going back, and the first thing I did was look where he was to see if he was still there. And I have a feeling I even the bed would have been like a landscape. It would have been like rolling. You know, these are the days before duvets or continental quilts, as we called them back then. But it would have been blankets and sheets and stuff. But it felt like a landscape rolling blankets. And I remember looking, and I think I must have smoothed it out or something, and to try and see if he was still there. And that sense of I'm only just remembering this now, the sense of disappointment. And that's bringing it back to that. You failed. You didn't hold your nerve. You did what everyone does. You ran. You didn't hold it. You didn't stay with it. And that's that shame, Joe. It's that feeling of shame that I should have stayed.
I think most people, I think it would be very, very few people, and I really do mean this, very few people that would stay, particularly as a child, never, I'm talking about adults even,
For
never
sure.
mind children,
Sure, for sure.
especially in your bedroom. But you could try connecting. Have you tried to do that?
I have. Do you know, it's funny. I'm one of these people that I'm very good at going into like any kind of form of guided meditation,
Right. Yeah.
I've been on sort of shamanic adventures in the past, guided. And I feel I have tried. I have, and saying, I'm ready to hear this now. Whatever it was, I'm here. And I even apologized to him for not sticking around.
Oh, I think that's a lovely thing to do.
It's almost that connection with some the things that are unseen, that some people naturally have. And of course, it's the old cliche that it's adulted out of us, isn't it? It's and it's whether you make a choice to go back and reconnect with that, to actually be open to it.
I'm thinking a place you could potentially go and do your exercise is down at that spring. I don't know whether it would be helpful for you to be in nature, but it sounds like you're being drawn to that place in any case.
It's on my it is an incredibly magical place. It's incredibly magical. And we've lived here now for 20 years, and I'd never knew this place was there. And when I found it, it was all, and when I read up on it and found it actually has archaeological evidence of stones and a spring, the spring's still there. It just feels the place to go. And somehow I know when the time's right, I will go there and I'll see what comes about. But it's definitely, I definitely feel an urge to reconnect. Never seen a ghost. I've never seen a UFO. But I feel incredibly privileged that I had that experience. I really do. And I look back on it now, and it's something that I really, really cherish. Funnily enough, another thing, my family was actually, my mum was English, and my dad, both mum and dad are both no longer with us, but my dad was from Glasgow. And you go back a couple of generations and you're back to Northern Ireland. So there was a, it's probably a story for so many people. From what I've traced back, it was potato famine time, working, commuting from Northern Ireland to Glasgow. So I can, the Scottish link is very, very important to me. But my dad's mum was, I now know, she was a cunning woman. I felt a real urge to make contact, sounds a bit glib, but to understand more about her. She died when my dad was 12. So we're going back to
Gosh.
1932. I think it was rheumatic fever. They lived in the East End tenement buildings in Glasgow. And she died when he was 12. She was a twin, and her twin sister had died at 3 months. I became interested in the paranormal when I was a teenager, probably around the time I read the book. And my dad was very much against it. He remember he I was going to a psychic fair, and he got really angry with me. But then later he told me that his mum, he always remembers as a young boy, streams of women coming into the tenement building. And she would, the main thing was fortunes, telling fortunes. Tea leaves were a big thing for her. And she always told him that she believed it came, she was guided by her twin. These aren't made up, you can't make this up. This is what happened. And I felt I've become very interested in the kind of cunning folk and folk magic. And I thought, hang on a minute, my grandmother must have been one of these people. She had this heritage that she felt she had a gift, that she was able to do these things out of a poverty-stricken 1920s Glasgow. I don't know. I just think at the moment I'm in that frame of mind where I feel like I'm trying to make contact with her as well, or try and tap into that spirit.
Wow, that's so interesting, isn't it? So it's all there. It's all kind of opening up again. And even the fact that you found the page, like I don't think that that's nothing's ever a coincidence, is it? You find things at just the right time. But also, I think with lockdown, we're just so open. We're opening up so much in this time. I feel like it's some kind of liminal space that we're in at the moment, where things that weren't perhaps previously possible, can be possible, because it's such a strange time. And so yeah, it's quite a powerful time.
I feel it is, and I think a lot of the time, and I work with some people, and this idea of feel and feel. We either feel things or we fill our time to stop feeling. And it does, I do have that sense that we're going back to, because we can't fill our time, you need to feel more.
Yeah, I like that. I hadn't thought about that before. Yeah,
Actually,
we're left with our feelings, aren't we?
we're
Yeah,
almost,
very
I
much
feel we're
left.
almost reverting back to not a pre-industrial revolution, but in some respects, we're staying in the same place we live. We're not,
Yeah.
and I'm very, very fortunate to be in the country. So we're surrounded by nature. We're in nature
Yeah.
every day. There's a shift there. So it feels, even telling that story, it does feel like it's opened something up for me. I think when you tell a story, you make it real. You acknowledge it. You look it in the eye and say, "That's what happened."
Yeah, thank you. It's really lovely to hear. Did you ever tell your mom even years later?
No, well, my mum died when I was quite young. Young, I was 23.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you, but it's no, I didn't. No, I didn't. I don't think I've told. Yeah, as I said, I reckon I can tell people on one hand, because you
Yeah.
don't, as you said, it's not something you tell people. You saw a ghost. Wow, that's really cool. I saw a UFO. Oh, it's even cooler. I saw a gnome. Hey,
Yeah.
what, a gnome? Oh, come on. And it's met with hilarity. It met with ridicule.
Yeah.
There's that difference. But I, knowing now what I've experienced and hearing other stories that are almost the same, the only thing that I'm not sure about is why it was in the house, because you imagine it to be outdoors and surrounded by greenery.
Do you know what was there before with that house? Do you happen to know what was there?
No, I know it was born. It was born. It was. Oh, there you go. That's a Freudian slip. It was built in 67. So I think my family had moved there from a very old property, very, very old property in where we lived. And okay, I might. Yeah, I mean, it was. My mum loved it because it had all mod cons, central heating, a washing machine. And she'd come from a house that didn't have any of that. It was that kind of primitive. What was there before? That's a really good question. I'd never thought of checking that out.
But do you know, there are lots of encounters that take place in homes.
Really?
Yeah, there really are. And you do get a lot of fairies, brownies, gnomes popping up in homes. Not all of them are benevolent. Some of them are really scary. But you do get really lovely, friendly ones as well. You do get fairies that help people with the housework. And there's quite a sort of it's an account, I think it was from the 90s that was really great, and I'll try and fish it out. But yeah, lots of sightings by children. They are often in the home. They are often in the home. And there's a really good book called Seeing Fairies. You know the
I
book,
haven't
yeah.
got it. I do
It's
know
a
the
really
book.
good one. Lastly, I suppose when you said it was terrifying, what do you feel was terrifying about it? Was just the fact that he was there,
No,
or
do you know, I'm kind of reflecting on that word. I don't know if that was the right word to use, because I think deep down, I don't think deep, no, I don't know. I'd like to retract that word. I think I felt I needed to be terrified, but I wasn't, but I still ran.
yeah.
I mean, if that doesn't sound like I'm contradicting myself, I think it was, well, hang on a minute, you've got to go. Someone's violated your room. This person has come in. And something has entered your room, that's your space.
Yeah.
But I knew, and I'm going to keep going back to this phrase, I knew it was all right. And I was being a bit pathetic that I ran, because I didn't need to. And probably a lot of me didn't want to go. But it was almost like, this is what I have to do.
Isn't that what we're taught as children? If we see strangers, we need to get away and we need to run. So you really have to do, you know, you have to forgive your childhood self, because this is exactly what you're told to do in any kind of situation like that. So it's very confusing, this kind of conflicting sense that, wow, what is this that's happening? Oh my goodness, this shouldn't be happening, that this couldn't be happening, and you're off, you know, to your mum, which is absolutely understandable. So no, you must forgive yourself for that. But as I say, you can attempt to connect and see how it goes.
I'll do that, and if you're happy for me to let you know how that
Oh,
goes.
I'd love you to. Yeah, that'd be brilliant. I'd love to hear, if you feel able to, because that's a very personal thing. But yeah, I'd absolutely love to hear about that.
Brilliant.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing, because by sharing, you have other people like you reading that and going, oh, thank goodness, it's not just me. It really does change things for people. It just helps us all to exchange notes and
Yeah.
yeah, this is what it's about. This was a very personal share, and I'd like to thank my guest again for being so open about his feelings relating to this experience. I know he's not alone in having had an encounter that is hard to fully recall, yet feels like a significant part of childhood. As I say, there's so much inner conflict in terms of whether it happened or was imagined, and how we later judge ourselves for our reaction at the time. Sometimes there's a yearning to go back and relive that experience, while for others it can be a very frightening event and one which is hard to forget. We're often given confusing messages as children, encouraged to believe in Santa and the Tooth Fairy, but told that monsters or goblins are just in the imagination. In an unusual event like this, we may react on instinct or fear, and we have to allow ourselves that. It's certainly not a failing. In any given situation, we're always doing our best with the knowledge and experience we have at that particular time. I love that he pauses to check that he's not imagining it as he heads out of the room. That child's sense of wonderment coming through. Then he goes back afterwards to see if it may still be there after all. After having the chance to feel safe and secure with his mother, maybe he felt brave enough to interact with the being. But of course, it's no longer there. He didn't tell his mum, and it's quite normal for both adults and children to keep these happenings to themselves. Similar to any extraordinary event, it provokes a sense of shock or awe, and it takes time for the experience to be assimilated, if indeed that ever happens at all. This is not something people talk about. It's not something we're prepared for. In Western culture, at least, our reductionist view of the world is fairly cut and dried, and anything outside the usual idea of normality is rarely considered, or if it is, it's dismissed, ridiculed, or seen as something that should never be spoken of, for fear of the unknown. I personally feel that the fact he was reading a book when it happened is quite significant. Reading was a big part of this little boy's life at the time, and, as an early reader, which is a great achievement, it sounds as if that was a big part of his identity. He continued to enjoy reading into adulthood, and we hear that it was as a result of reading another book that it drew him back to the memory and the realization of the event that had taken place all those years ago. I'm really curious about this, and I wonder whether it could be that simply doing what he dearly loved, that sense of joy, had facilitated a connection with the other world. Doing what we love, whatever it is, brings us back to who we truly are and is a really powerful act. Please make time for doing what you really love. During my research, I found a very similar encounter in Marjorie T. Johnson's Seeing Fairies, which I've added to the show notes. I've also provided some other examples of fairies in the home. There are many accounts in folklore, particularly hobgoblins, and there's one or two more modern encounters which are really interesting. Once again, thanks so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please subscribe, rate, and share it with someone else whom you think might enjoy it. And you can tweet about it at @remain_curious. At the forefront of this project is the aim to break the taboo around talking of fairy experiences. These events happen, and the more we discuss them, the better we'll all begin to understand. Much love, and always remain curious.